Welcome to Share the Bytes, Episode 3, Working Together. So anyway, Corey, you remember in your old childhood show called Bozo the Clown?
No, actually, Ian, I was one of those few traumatized students that, or young children that just didn't get to watch a lot of television as a child. But fill me in, would you?
Okay. Well, 80s children's show, Saturday morning, you had cartoons and you had Bozo the Clown. And it was kind of this kids variety show where it was sort of like a mini circus. One of my favorite things to watch was this game where kids would win prizes and toys, but they had to throw ping pong balls into buckets that were certain distances away. They were on the buckets were on the floor, not a table. Remember, this is a kids' show.
Yeah.
And you're thinking of, if I had a ping pong ball and a cup, I could easily throw that, get there and there, and win that toy. And I so much want that new bicycle. But you would see all these kids throwing the ping pong balls, and they would miss. And you're going, come on, that is just so easy to do. And out of everything I remember of the show, which, to be honest, isn't much, that's the one thing that stands out in my mind most of all.
Aren't the Simpsons making fun of that with Krusty the Clown or something like that? Or is he just kind of the...
No, I'm pretty sure it's probably a direct parody. I would not be surprised, because the hair going out like this, that was Bozo.
Yeah, it had to be. I seem to remember his shows being, "Hey kids," or however it was. "I'm on the Krusty and Clown Show."
Oh yeah.
So what we got on the menu today, Ian?
Well, I've had a few questions from people about, well, if I'm running Linux, that means I can't run anything with Windows, and they just can't work together. They hate each other. And I try to tell people, well, that's not true. You can get them work together. You can share files. There's lots of possibilities. So today I wanted to talk about, how do you do that? How do you get Linux and Windows to play nicely together? Mm-hmm. And you have quite a bit of experience with that, and just recently, by the way.
Yeah, I actually just did a massive storage update. I got myself technically 16 terabytes, but, you know, with the way hard drive manufacturers advertise it as one number and it actually being a smaller number than that, and then putting it into a RAID array, it cut it down even more. Into RAID 5, for those who care. I have 12.73 terabytes of storage that I can... over my 500 gigabytes of storage that I previously had.
All right, now the next logical question is, what do you do with 12.7 terabytes?
That's a good question. When I find the answer to that, I will certainly let you know.
Okay.
One of the things I originally had going with this server, the original one, was a file sharing over the network. And while Linux itself has its own network filing or file sharing system called NFS, which stands for Network File Share, I think, that particular piece of software is specifically designed for permanent file connections, so that if you wanted to, say, have your home directory on one server and then just run an operating system on a different machine, you can set it up so that that machine would turn on, connect to that, and then it would just use that as your home directory.
Okay.
You know, a myriad of possibilities along those same lines. But I also, and a lot of people in this house who don't really use it, but most everybody these days uses Windows of some kind.
Yep.
Brings us back to our original topic. And to cover that, the open source community has created a fantastic piece of software called Samba. Don't ask me what it stands for. I used to know. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It's on Wikipedia.
Yeah, you can just Wikipedia. And actually, they've released the new version 4, which is supposed to be better for making your own domain and server management and all that other garbage. But the basic Samba, all it does is it pretends to be a Windows file share.
Uh-huh.
And you can set it up a myriad of ways to share files over the network, and anyone with a Windows, or for that matter, a Linux box these days, mm-hmm. can connect to it and use the files straight off of your server. And, you know, it works with file permissions. You can have just a guest account login, et cetera, et cetera. It makes it really, really simple.
Okay, cool.
Speaking. Oftentimes, I found, too, setting up a Samba server is tons easier, especially with the way Windows has been doing its security over the last several years, revisions, what have you. It's often tons easier to just throw together a Samba server and share files that way.
Yep. Now, the server that you have set up, where did you get the software? And really, what makes it so much easier to deal with than working directly with a Samba server?
You mean a Windows server?
I'm sorry, Windows server, yeah.
Yeah, okay. You can get it anywhere. Actually, Samba is a software package that is included in pretty much every single Linux distro you could possibly imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so uniform, and especially all the ones that run with a GUI have some form of browsing, at least, built into them, so you can connect to it. So you can at least connect to other file share servers without having, and then, or to be able to browse the file network, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Now, with the Windows people, I'm sorry, will they be able to see these shared folders if they just click into My Computer, My Explorer? Do they have to type in certain internet addresses to find it? How does it work for them?
Yeah. Assuming you have one set up already, either on a Windows box or a Linux box, using Samba or just Windows. The way to connect to it, if you don't know, is to open up Explorer in Windows and do // IP address /share. If you've got a good DNS, local DNS server, you can usually do // computer name /share. And then whether they've got file permissions set up for that or if it's just anybody can get on and check this out,
feature. So essentially, if it's a guest account open for everybody to read, maybe not write to the drive, or you have separate accounts, so in each unique username, login, that whole idea. So again, you have several people in your house, you want to share files, but there's sometimes, well, I just want to store my files. Again, you've got 12.7 terabytes, but I don't, that, not all my video. That, again, like our show here, doesn't fit on the hard drive, so I move it to there, but I don't want somebody in the house taking a look at it and accidentally deleting it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And mentioning one of my old clips, I think, when I mentioned Xbox Media Center, and I think you remember that episode? Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually still have that set up here at this new house, and that's the way I connect, or I store my video files and my audio files is I've got the massive server hiding over here, and then I connect to it using Xbox Media Center across the network. You know, don't get me wrong, you could try and put all those on the Xbox, but I think not
might
too
be
many
a bit tough.
More than 20 space. And so that works out really well, except for there's some funky things that go on with the new version of Xbox Media Center for the Xbox, but that's a different topic entirely.
Yeah. All right, so now we know how to connect to the file server with Windows. Well, what about Linux? Do you have to enter in the same IP address? Is it using the //? What's different? Or the same?
A lot of things. In the typical way that Linux is, there's at least 6 or 7 or 10 different ways to do the same thing because someone saw, oh, you do that way. Okay, but I don't really want to do it that way. I want to do it this way plus that. And you get the idea. So there's literally hundreds of ways. There's the standard command. There's a command line utility that it's called SMB client that you can browse it. And if you're just a fan of the command line, that's the way to go. There's 4 or 5 different actual GUI interfaces that are not dependent upon a particular desktop manager you can get. They're a little funky and not perfect. None of them are perfect. Don't get me wrong. None of them are perfect. So don't expect that, please. And then there's at least with Kubuntu or sorry, KDE and GNOME, they both have KDE and GNOME being the desktop managers. What you see when you bring up your desktop and the icons and the menus, etc. They both have Samba built into them. Now, their particular methods of connecting to them are slightly different. GNOME, which is what I commonly use, even though it's got its quirks, you have the up in the left-hand corner of the screen, you've got the Places drop-down menu, and then you can click Connect to Server, and then a window will pop up. You pull a drop-down menu and say Windows File Share, and then you enter the IP address and the share name, and I think that's pretty much all you need. Click OK and then tell it the subnet, which for most people is work group, so you don't even have to change. And password or username, password, go. And that's for GNOME. KDE has something similar, but be warned, all of these are not perfect. And especially if you try to use the quote unquote browse feature through Nautilus in GNOME, at the very least, it's slow and pretty much not guaranteed to work. I've had several cases where it's come up and be like, not able to actually search the network. What do you want from me? It didn't say that, but that's what it wanted to do. Secretly, it's hard.
And now for our listeners who want to kind of delve a little bit more deeper into it and have a little bit more knowledge with Windows and Linux. Well, if this is going to be a Linux server versus a Windows, you've got to format the drives. And so now we're talking about file systems for the drives. Windows uses NTFS, NT file system. Linux uses a myriad of other file systems, RiserFS, ext2, ext3, ext4. And each of these are just the way the operating system manages the data on the physical drive itself. In your case, which file system did you use?
I went really nerdy and went with the latest ext4. There was a bunch of really new, cool, schnifty, snifty features, but I can't remember using it. When I did this last server, it was that I did that as well, and there were advantages to having the new ext4. In fact, I think it was just barely out of development release at that
Yeah, and I
point.
know ext4 is a lot better with regards to searching for files as well as packing the data to eliminate fragmentation. Once again, it's the normal evolution of ext3. For those who are curious about, all right, well, if I am going to install Linux on the drives, which one do I use? ext2, ext3, ext4? Maybe I should always use the latest and greatest. But something that I discovered is that's not all necessarily true. Specifically for SSD drives, our solid state drives, one of the issues that you have is read and write lifetime. And well, with these newer file systems, whether it's NTFS for Windows or ext3 and ext4, you have journaling, which is basically reading the hard drive and writing to it on a regular basis to index files, manage them, again, just its overall operation. And that puts wear and tear on your SSD. So if you're going to use Linux, the recommended one is to use ext2. And that file system does not have journaling enabled. Or I'm not even sure, I don't think it has that capability. It's something to look in a little bit more deep. But when people ask me, that's what I tell them. If you're going to install an SSD, format it to ext2, a lot safer, your drive will last a lot longer. Now, how much longer? Well, that's always a matter up for debate, but I think it's always better to go on the side of caution.
It's gonna be nice when SSDs eventually price to storage ratio catch up to where we are these days.
Now here's the next logical step. All right, so now I've got a thumb drive and I want to share files between the two machines. Should I format it to NTFS or should I format it to one of the EXTs for driving? Or is there a happy medium? In fact, I believe the common format that SSDs usually have when you pull them out of the box is FAT32.
And you're talking about a SSD drive, not a flash forward drive, correct?
Or like a thumb drive or a flash card, that kind of thing.
Most of those, yeah, are pre-formatted with FAT. They might be in FAT32. I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's FAT32, I think. Because I know FAT16 doesn't support anything over 2 gigs.
Yeah, and 32 is caught at 4, so
Yeah.
I would leave it at FAT32. Linux has the capability to read both. And I believe, I haven't done research on this recently, the NTFS 4 or NTFS on a flash drive is not really the best idea in the world in the first place. Because flash drives actually aren't physical medium in the way the operating system is used to dealing with a hard drive. There's actually a translation layer between the actual data storage and then the understanding of the operating system seeing the data storage. And if you, the reason, that's the reason why they leave it in FAT32 is it's just nice and simple, and you'll run into read errors, and I'm just throwing technical words out here at this point, but there's a good reason why they have it in FAT32. Now, there was also, when I was researching this, there also was a mention of an actual flash drive specific. Dang it, drop the word. It's what NTFS is. Sorry, file system, sorry. A flash drive specific file system that was supposed to work very well with the translation layer and actually cut down a lot on the translation cost between the two mediums. And I don't remember what it's called. Again, I'm wonderful today. But there is one they're looking at. I believe Linux was probably the first one to support it, and Windows was doing its usual, if you really want to, maybe. So, yeah.
Well, that's great. I mean, for anybody who wants to get started, and again, to reassure you that Linux and Windows can work together, that's kind of the quick rundown of it all. There can be a lot more research, but if you just want to get a system up and running, that's all you really need to know. It doesn't get much easier than that, to be honest. That's the nice thing is computer programmers have gone a long ways of making these things compatible. You don't have to choose one over the other.
Yeah, one way.
So anyway, time for the pick of the show. Said I have mine. It's a website this time, and it's something I found out, which I found really cool. It's called zetcode.com. Zetcode. It's a phenomenal web page that gives beginner and intermediate tutorials for virtually every modern programming language under the sun. It was amazing. I found stuff on there for C Sharp, VB, the .NET framework for Windows, Python, PHP, ASP, Java, Java Swing, Qt, GTK, and all the examples you could ever want. So if you want to kind of get started and you just want to throw yourself and you're saying, here, let me just randomly pick which one to learn, it's a great website. I highly recommend you checking it out.
Very nice. And as I've been doing a lot of work lately on servers, etc., on my original box, I did a lot of straight up command line config file editing, and at one point I had a VPN running and the file server running and four or five other things. And this time I wanted to try something a little simpler. And I discovered this tool called Webmin. It's just one word, Webmin. And it is a web server that runs on your file or on your computer that has a ton of plugins for everything. They call them modules. And you can, using the web graphic interface, you can configure your file server, your DNS server, your VPN, da 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 da. And it's, if you're familiar, don't get me wrong, you shouldn't just skip over and start using this. If you really want to understand what's going on, you should start from the command line, do the text files, figure that out, and be like, oh, okay. And then when you get to the GUI, it's like, oh, okay, da, 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 done. It took me 10 minutes to set up Samba, which the last time I think took about an hour. It was miserable. So, Webmin, it's actually a package, at least in Ubuntu, which is the system I'm using right now, but I'm sure that every single OS has it at some point. If not, It's actually not dependent upon anything except a few. It's at least not dependent upon Apache, the web server Apache. It has its own mini browser. You can get the files off of the SourceForge page, Google Webmin, brings it right up, bam, install it, and it's that's all I can say. It's just fantastic for, especially if you have to do a lot of single location web server management or computer server management. So
Awesome. Good deal. All right. Well, thank you very much, and I hope everybody can join us next time.
thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right.
Oh, Krusty the Clown, really? Wow.
Well, you know,
That, it's
it's getting good.